Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
History will record at the first major ground battle in the 21st century. Involving American forces began with the cavalry charge. I guess that's what you get when you bring together a president from Texas with a secretary of defense who actually remembers when America had a cavalry.
That's what you get when you bring together a president from Texas. Texas. Oh, my God. Did you watch any of this today? We had C-SPAN on this afternoon watching the... I didn't know what it was. You know, once again, I was over at the playground with Molly while Kathy was home baking cookies. It's so true. Gingerbread cookies, little gingerbread men, you know. I bring Molly home and we eat their heads off. And we came in and Kathy is laughing. So what? She said, look. We looked on C-SPAN and there it was. Rumsfeld wrapping up his bloody career with a full-color cordon parade at the Pentagon today. Rummy Palooza, that's what it looked like. My God. You know, here we go. Another neocon fades to black, but not before extracting buckets of blood and barrels of crude for the Bush crime family. Rumapalooza! There he is, ladies and gentlemen! The most successful Secretary of Defense in history of this country. It's really something to behold, those dress blues and starched shirts and white gloves, all those gleaming, polished guns. I bet you Lynn Cheney isn't getting any sleep tonight. Dick is still excited, right? Oh! So there they were, Dick and the Bush, giving their twisted tributes. We have that sound from Drunk and Drunker on the show tonight. You know, we make a lot of jokes about how Rumsfeld is really 1,400 years old and just keeps getting reanimated every few centuries to fulfill some demonic leader's lust for blood. But we have proof tonight, truth seekers, that this old bastard is really a vampire who lives in a box of consecrated dirt. You know, however vampires are consecrated, does some demon urinate on the... I don't even know. But we have the proof tonight. A couple of slips of the forked tongues of Dick and Bush reveal the grisly truth about von Rumsfeld. So stick around. Stick around. Rumsfeld is an accomplished man. There's no question about that. He's also a poet. Did you know that? Not that he writes poetry, but listen to this. This comes from Slate Magazine. They compiled a collection of Rumsfeld's poems. The poems are the exact words of the defense secretary is taken from the official transcripts on the Defense Department's website. Now, again, they're not intended. These are not poetry readings. These all come from press briefings. One of my favorites, this is from February 12, 2002, at a Department of Defense news briefing, and the title is The Unknown. Do we have any music for this? Can you think of any? I don't know what kind of music we would put behind this. All right, here we go. This is entitled The Unknown. As we know, there are no knowns. There are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know. That's a good one. All right, how about this one? This is entitled The Glass Box. What do you have? What do you have? What are you playing back there? You know, it's the old glass box at the gas station where you're using those little things trying to pick up the prize and you can't find it. It's all these arms are going down in there and so you keep dropping it and picking it up again and moving it. But some of you are probably too young to remember those glass boxes. But they used to have them at all the gas stations when I was a kid. That's from a December 2001 Department of Defense news briefing. Here's one from same year, May 16th, interview with the New York Times. This is titled A Confession. Once in a while, I'm standing here doing something. And I think, what in the world am I doing here? It's a big surprise. This one is a good one. This is entitled Happenings. You're going to be told lots of things. You get told things every day that don't happen. It doesn't seem to bother people. They don't. It's printed in the press. The world thinks all these things happen. They never happened. Everyone's so eager to get the story before, in fact, the story's there, that the world is constantly being fed things that haven't happened. All I can tell you is, it hasn't happened. It's going to happen. This one is The Digital Revolution. Oh, my goodness gracious. What you can buy off the internet in terms of overhead photography. A trained ape can know an awful lot of what is going on in this world just by punching on his mouse for a relatively modest cost. That's from June 9th, 2001. Here's one from October 12th, the Department of Defense news briefing, 2001, entitled The Situation. Things will not necessarily be continuous. The fact that they are something other than perfectly continuous ought not to be characterized as a pause. There will be some things that people will see. There will be some things that people won't see. And life goes on. From February 28, 2003, Department of Defense briefing, this is entitled Clarity. I think what you'll find is, whatever it is we do substantively, there will be near perfect clarity as to what it is. And it will be known. And it will be known to the Congress. And it will be known to you, probably, before we decide it. But it will be known. This is a good one. This is about NATO. This is from July 9th, 2003. You may think it's something I ought to know, but I happen not to. That's life. This one's on reporters from February 19th, 2003. If you do something, somebody's not going to agree with it. That's life. From May 7, 2002 on the budget. If you do anything, someone's not going to like it. That's life. From May 17, 2002 on leaks. Look bumpy? Sure. But you pick up and go on. That's life. on Democracy from February 20th, 2003. People elected those people to office. That's what they think, and that's life. On People from November 16th, 2001. They're going to have some impact on what happens in that country, and that's not wrong. That's life. On Criticism, it makes it complicated. Sometimes it makes it difficult. That's life. Ah. Mr. Rumsfeld, we hardly knew you. Riding into war in a cavalry charge. I'm surprised Bush didn't say cavalry charge. So there it was today, Donald Rumsfeld, the public face of a hideous, murderous, filthy, illegal, illegitimate, immoral war, bidding farewell to the Pentagon in a splashy send-off featuring lavish praise from Bush, Cheney, and the ghosts of Hitler, Stalin, Genghis Khan, and Alex the Great. We'll have some of those sound bites for you coming back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The lights, the party's over. They say that all good things must end. Call it a night. The party's over.
I believe what I said yesterday. I don't know what I said, but I know what I think. And I assume it's what I said.
Oh, my God. You know, if he weren't such a murderous, ghoulish old bastard, it would be fun to have him around, wouldn't it? I mean, he says the damnedest things. Another thing he said, I would not say that the future is necessarily less predictable than the past. I think the past was not predictable when it started. Death has a tendency to encourage a depressing view of war. Needless to say, the president is correct, whatever it was he said. I don't know what the facts are, but somebody's certainly going to sit down with him and find out what he knows that they may not know and make sure he knows what they know that he may not know. Now, in light of all this, Chucklenuts took the podium today at one point to praise this murderer. And so typical of the backward, bizarre world newspeak Orwellian universe that Raisin Brain floats around in, he continues to list Rummy's failures as if they're some kind of success. The pinnacle here is how he describes Rummy's clarity of speech. See if you can find anything truthful in any of these accolades.
He took ballistic missile defense from theory to reality. And because of his leadership, America now has an initial capability to track a ballistic missile headed for our country and destroy it before it harms our people.
What? Except it doesn't work. Oh, Jesus.
In every decision Donald Rumsfeld made over the past 6 years, he always put the troops first. I have seen Donald Rumsfeld's character and his integrity. He was always assured I had the best possible advice, the opportunity to hear and weigh conflicting points of view. He spoke straight. It was easy to understand him. The record of Don Rumsfeld's tenure is clear. There has been more profound change at the Department of Defense over the past 6 years than at any time since the department's creation in the late 1940s.
You know, that's technically correct, that last part, if Bush means changed for the worse. He always put the troops first, yeah, right out there on the front lines with no body armor, no armored Humvees. Like you said, you go to war with what you got. Suck it up, soldier. And was it Rumsfeld or was it Rumsfeld that said the Vietnam draftees added no value to the military? I thought that was Kissinger. Kissinger said something else evil about soldiers. Oh, my God. He spoke straight. It was easy to understand him, which proves you're as crazy as he is, Chucklenuts, because we normal people don't speak psychopath. And it just goes on and on today. It was unbelievable, wasn't it? Did you see any of it? A drum roll. This is the way this AP reports it. A drum roll marked the ceremonial entrance of Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld to a grassy field outside the Pentagon. Troops fired a cannon salute of 19 rounds. On Monday, Robert Gates takes over from Rumsfeld, and far from apologizing for the Iraq War, speakers heralded both the war and the secretary's leadership. Oh, my God. Bush said, on his watch, the United States military helped the Iraqi people establish a constitutional democracy in the heart of the Middle East, a watershed event in the history of freedom. This man knows how to lead, and he did, and the country's better off for it. And they all sat there. The other thing I watched on television today was the graduation ceremonies of Prince William in the UK. He graduates from Sandhurst Military Institution in the UK. I guess he graduates as a lieutenant, and his amour of four years, is that how long he's been dating this young woman, sat there dressed in red watching him. And the pomp and circumstance, well, the pomp anyway, of this Sandhurst Military Academy graduation today is quite the thing to see. Meanwhile, back here, we have a slimy, murderous, lying, degenerate being kissed off by the government of the United States as though he, Rumsfeld, had done something, anything, worthwhile, praiseworthy, positive, in all the years he has wormed his way into government. From handing Saddam Hussein weapons of mass destruction, from working with Gerald Ford when the country was in chaos because of another Republican pig, Nixon, all the way through Bush 2, sliming his way through the weapons industry, and then reemerging, coming out of his coffin, shaking the hallowed dirt off his body and assuming the position of Secretary of Defense. Oh.
The threats are real, and the lethality is multiples of what we have previously experienced.
26 before the hour. We have very astute listeners. Here's the Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, January 2003, on the draft during the Vietnam War. Quote, big categories were exempted. People who were in college, people who were teaching, people who were married, and what was left was sucked into the intake, trained for a period of months, and then went out adding no value, no advantage really, to the United States Armed Services, end quote. Jesus Christ, wouldn't you like to just take him now and chain him to the memorial, Vietnam Memorial, those 58,000 dead soldiers and Marines and sailors and airmen, just chain him to that wall. Occasionally throw him a chunk of raw meat or a screaming baby and just leave him to die. What a thug. What a rotten, rotten man. Now, he was fired, wasn't he? Wasn't he removed from office? He damn sure did not resign. He was fired. Who fired him? Does anybody have any ideas? Was it Rove? Was it Cheney? Chucklenuts doesn't fire anybody. He doesn't hire anybody. He doesn't do anything except take his pills and drink and pretend like he's a warrior. Who fired him? I don't know. But here's Dick Cheney from the ceremony and going away party for Rumsferatu. Cheney said he and Rummy had worked together for years and were good friends and had a lot in common, stopping just short of discussing their dual histories as undead, blood-sucking ghouls.
It is well known that Don Rumsfeld and I are longtime friends and associates, and our experiences in Washington have been very similar.
Blah.
We both served as members of Congress.
Blah.
Both of us have been Secretary of Defense.
Blood.
Both of us have been White House Chief of Staff.
Blood.
If you've been on his staff, you know that Don has an incredibly sharp eye for detail.
Like vampires.
He has near-perfect recall of everything he's told you and everything you've told him. He has a way of asking you the one question you're not prepared for.
Where is your neck?
And apparently he does not sleep.
Of course he doesn't sleep, at least not at night! He doesn't sleep. It's well known that Don Rumsfeld and I are longtime friends and associates. Our experiences in Washington have been very similar. Back in college in the 1400s, we were dorm mates, shared the same box of sacred dirt under the monastery. Blah. Both of us have been White House Chief of Staff. We both survived the witch hunts of the 1680s. If you've been on his staff, you know that Don has an incredibly sharp eye for detail. Vampire eyes see in the dark. He has near perfect recall of everything he's told you and everything you've told him, but he can't see his own reflection in the mirror. And apparently he does not sleep. Right. And he doesn't drink wine. Cheney then goes on to make the rather extreme statement that Rummy is the best Secretary of State this nation has ever seen. Secretary of Death. What did I say? Secretary of State? Oh, my God. Secretary of Death this nation has ever seen. That's got to make Gates feel weird, doesn't it? Kind of makes you wonder why he's being replaced if Rumsfeld is the best ever. The best ever. And yet the evil, blood-sucking, flesh-eating son of a bitch has been fired. Will someone explain this to me, please?
The record of the years 2001 to 2006 only confirms the good qualities and the gift for leadership that Don Rumsfeld has shown all his life.
Blah.
Our former boss, President Gerald Ford, said recently that holding the office of Secretary of Defense in times like these requires a certain amount of steel. Don Rumsfeld has that steel in him. In his regard for our people in uniform, in his unwavering strength through unprecedented challenges, in his example of leadership and patriotic service, I believe the record speaks for itself. Don Rumsfeld is the finest Secretary of Defense this nation has ever had.
And have I told you my daughter's pregnant? Don Rumsfeld is the finest Secretary of Defense this nation has ever had. Sure, if you're a psycho killer like you, Dick, who shoots his friends in the face. Our former boss, President Gerald Ford, said recently that his arms were falling off and he had a bug in his nose. He is 110, and he said that holding the office of Secretary of Defense in times like these requires a certain amount of steel. Don Rumsfeld has that steel in him. Well, I'll tell you what, good thing it wasn't wood. That could have killed him. Man. This is unbelievable. We watched this today. I normally stay away from this stuff because I can't take it. If it were one of these comedy shows with puppets from the UK, it would be great fun. But these evil sons of bitches are determining who lives and who dies in this country. Certainly, who lives and who dies among those who have put on the uniform of the United States military, and most assuredly, who lives and who dies in this poor, sad, bastardized, murdered country of Iraq. So it's not funny, is it? Back to Chuckle Nuts from today's Rumapalooza. Oh, Chicken Hawk Chuckle Nuts. Stand up there, the boy who ducked into a Champaign, Texas Air National Guard unit. Yeah, I was out up on an airplane. By God, I'll tell you what. Let me tell you what. You know, you got a president from Texas who knows all about drugs and speed and stuff. Damn, I'm going to tell you something. You know, I'd get on one of them airplanes that they gave me down there at Fort Hood, Texas. Or not in Fort Hood, wherever they say. Ah, hell, I don't know. And jacked up on about half a G of coke. Son of a bitch! And you take that sucker up to about 30,000 feet, nose her over, and come screaming down to earth. Boy, you don't know what a rush is. But I tell you what, I wasn't about to go to Vietnam. So Chicken Hawk takes to the podium to address the assembled troops and sing the praises of the man his pappy ordered him to fire.
Men and women of the armed forces.
Forces?
I'm pleased to join you.
Stop. Did he say the armed forces? will you start that again?
Men and women of the armed forces.
No, wait a minute. Men and women of the armed forces? Oh, Jesus. Go ahead.
Men and women of the armed forces, I'm pleased to join you as we pay tribute to one of America's most skilled, energetic, and dedicated public servants, the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld. Don Rumsfeld has been at my side from the moment I took office. We've been through war together.
Oh, you have not.
Don Rumsfeld has served with distinction in many important positions.
Prone.
Congressman.
Upright.
Counselor to the President.
On his back.
Ambassador to NATO.
Bent over.
White House Chief of Staff.
Head up his butt.
Secretary of Defense. Yet to this day, the title that has brought him his greatest pride is Dad and now Granddad.
What?!
And so today, as we honor a fine man, we also honor his family, Joyce Rumsfeld and his children. Don is the only man.
This is his wife.
Don Rumsfeld is the only man to have served as Secretary of Defense for two presidents in two different centuries.
There's another clue. He's also served as a warlord in two other centuries, an executioner for the king in one other century. Then he was the official beheader for Genghis Khan in another century. He's been around for a long time, this Rumsfeld. Think I'm kidding about Rumsfeld being one of the undead? Listen up.
Under Secretary Rumsfeld's leadership, U.S. and coalition forces launched one of the most innovative military campaigns in the history of modern warfare, sending special operations forces into Afghanistan to link up with anti-Taliban fighters, to ride with them on horseback, and to launch a stunning assault against the enemy. History will record that the first major ground battle in the 21st century involving American forces began with the cavalry charge. I guess that's what you get when you bring together a president from Texas.
Texas?
With a Secretary of Defense who actually remembers when America had a cavalry.
Cavalry? When America, he did say cavalry, didn't he? Scary combination indeed. You know, Chuckle Nuts, Rumsfeld remembers muskets, too. And the guillotine. And catapults. And clubs. And sticks. And spears. And rocks. And antelope bones.
Right now I'm leaving, so you'd better say so long. Yeah.
would be to stand up here and start previewing things that somebody's thinking about or not thinking about, or starting to disabuse you of each thing somebody tells you that we're thinking about, because then the first time we don't disabuse you, you'll say, aha, that's what they're going to do.
Bob writes, Bob over at headonradio.com, why does this remind me of the funeral they gave Rommel? Armed versus, he found the tequila bottle Pickles keeps hidden under her side of the bed. Dean in Connecticut says, something Cheney forgot to mention about Rumsfeld and himself, neither of the presidents for whom they worked were ever elected by the American people. All right, the last bit of sound here we have for you from the ceremony today of the most disgraced, dishonorable son of a bitch ever to occupy the office of Secretary of War in the history of this republic. This is the man who authorized, who designed the methods of torture to be used against innocent detainees. This is the man who said, screw the Geneva Conventions. This is the man who has guaranteed that any American soldier or civilian captured by these insane jihadists will now be beheaded, period. No discussion, no debate, no bargaining. And they honored this monster today. They honored this killer, this disgusting, un-American monster. Now here's what we're going to do. We have one more soundbite from today, from the Rumapalooza debauchery that occurred in D.C. Coming back after the break at the top of the hour, this is the last thing we're ever going to do on Rumsfeld. But we have, Kathy put together a collection in Rumsfeld in his own words. Now, I know a couple of you have emailed me and said, I can't take it, I'm leaving. All right, I understand. Goodbye. Come back in about half an hour, and you know, we'll probably be into phone calls and stuff. But we're going to play this for you. I think it runs just under 6 minutes when we come back. And I want you to hear this. Because taken in its totality, what Rumsfeld has said is nothing less than the ramblings of another insane man who is in a position to decide life and death for so many people on this planet, who has been removed from office because of his incompetence. The upper levels of the military are against him. The Republican leadership is against him. The Democratic leadership is against him. You are against him, and so am I. And everybody knows this, that he is incompetent. He is a liar. He is a nutball. He is a killer. He has sent our soldiers into a war in which they cannot even defend themselves, much less determine who the enemy is. And this rat bastard is honored today. That's where we are in this country under George W. Bush. Here's the last one out of Chuckle Nuts. And even I can't believe this freak is touting Rummy's Iraqi strategy as some kind of proud accomplishment in his career? The Iraqi strategy? When you consider that his total incompetence is the reason he is leaving, and you hear Bush say this.
On his watch, the United States military helped the Iraqi people establish a constitutional democracy in the heart of the Middle East, a watershed event in the story of freedom.
Yeah.
As he met the challenges of fighting a new and unfamiliar war,
oh,
Don Rumsfeld kept his eyes on the horizon and on the threats that still await us as this new century unfolds.
Because he really screwed up in all the other centuries!
Transformation of America's global defense posture since the start of the Cold War, repositioning our forces so they can surge quickly to deal with unexpected threats.
That doesn't seem to be working.
It's setting the stage for our global military presence for the next 50 years.
Because that's how long you plan to keep us in Iraq, isn't it, you unconscionable, murderous bastard? Only none of you will be around 50 years from now. None of you! Okay, Rumsfeld will. All right, so will Cheney. Don Rumsfeld kept his eye on the horizon. Who wrote that? Who wrote that? Honest John the Commie or somebody? Bush says Don Rumsfeld kept his eyes on the horizon and on the threats that still await us as this new century unfolds. Because he really screwed up in all the other centuries.
He kept his eye on the horizon. See, that was part of his anti-missile, anti-ballistic
missile. Here comes one!
Right? That's the only thing that worked.
Here comes one! What he did was stretch our military to the point where the top generals will tell you, Jesus, God in heaven, it's broken! Rumsfeld broke our military. How many times have you heard these Republican rat bastards over the past 25 years tell you that the Democrats destroyed our military? The Democrats never funded the military. The Democrats left us in a vulnerable position. Look what this Republican administration has done, Truth Seeker. Take a look. The generals are saying, oh my God! We have no more reserves to pull on. We have nothing left back home. The box is empty. The glass is not half full or half empty. It's smashed! And Rumsfeld did it. And they honored him today. They honored him today. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. All right, this is going to be it for us regarding Rumsfeld. I frankly hope that the next thing I mention about him on this radio program, whenever it occurs, is his obituary. You should hear this. You've heard it before. Kathy put this together some time ago. And this is a collection of Rumsfeld at his snotty, snotty best. And it's just crazy. So I hope during the break you made some popcorn. Sit back. We're going to play this, and then we're through with Rumsfeld. Here he is, the Secretary of Death, Donald Rumsfeld.
Hello. Is there anybody in there? Just not if you can hear me. Is there anyone home?
The message is that there are known knowns. There are things we know that we know. There are known unknowns. That is to say, there are things that we now know we don't know. Incentivize a large number of people to begin crawling through those tunnels and caves looking for the bad folks. The threats are real, and the lethality is multiples of what we have previously experienced. I believe that the President's Homeland Security Strategy paper, I don't think it specifically mentioned Posse Comitatus, did it? It did. I'll have to go reread that, little Dickens. Near my office is an American flag done in
origami.
That's one of those words that I haven't mastered yet. But there are also unknown unknowns. There are things we do not know, we don't know. As Shakespeare said.
Well, first, I know, I knew of, nor do I know today of any evidence that he was in Tora Bora at the time.
We do know of certain knowledge that he is either in Afghanistan or in some other country or dead.
Well, it would be nice to find him. Is that likely? No, I think it's not likely that we'll never find him. I think we will at some point find information about where he is and what he's up to, if he exists at all.
We've been looking and we haven't found him. Now, as I've said, if you're chasing a chicken around the barnyard and you haven't got him, were you close sometime? I don't know. Maybe you were, maybe you weren't. But we don't know. Well, you know, something's neither good nor bad, but thinking makes it so, I suppose. I can say that the review says nothing about targeting any country with nuclear weapons. The United States targets no country on a day-to-day basis. Believe what I said yesterday. I don't know what I said, but I know what I think. And I assume it's what I said. Oh, goodness, I don't think so, although that's what I think. That there are known knowns. There are things we know that we know. It will not be swift. It is not a marathon. It is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And, of course, the advantage of not acting against the moon it would be that no one could say that you acted. They would say, isn't that good? You didn't do anything against the moon. So the fact that voices can cluster in a certain way does not mean that is necessarily the wise course or the prudent course. We're not interested in trying him at the moment. We're interested in finding out what in the world he knows. Our job as responsible government officials is to do everything possible to find out what that person knows. Is it inhumane to do that? No. Would it be stupid to do anything else? Yes. The fact remains that when a person is captured, their citizenship is interesting. I think that Afghanistan is a country where people get killed. I just think that the way to look at it is not that. The other side of the coin of not acting against the moon in the event that the moon posed a serious threat would be that you then suffered a serious loss and you're sorry after that's over.
I had never seen it. That's a fact. That it clearly was a document, if there was such a document, which I've never seen.
But there are also unknown unknowns. There are things we do not know, we don't know. And each year we discover a few more of those unknown unknowns.
If the investigation proves that it was nothing, then there's no problem. I am old-fashioned. I think that the idea, if people start treating war plans like they're paper airplanes and they can fly them around this building and throw them at anybody who wants them, I think it's outrageous. It's inexcusable, and they ought to be in jail.
I had to get that kangaroo court in there, and that characterization is so far from the mark. Shocked. I have heard that someone somewhere in some place selected those words, and some preliminary aspect of things used them. I just don't know the answer, but I doubt it. I think I just answered that question. This is fantastic. I've got a laser pointer. Holy mackerel. I happen to know the answer to this to give it to you. It would get me down to a level of detail that I'd prefer not. And it's not the kind of thing that I'm going to get into in any detail. I didn't say I had no information. I said I had no comment that I cared to make. I think I'm going to pass on that one.
Oh God! I as promised, that's the end of it. I couldn't take very much of that either. It's just mind blowing to me how the Republicans insist on rewarding, and incredibly so, murderous incompetence.
It kills me when Bush said today that he spoke with clarity. And yeah. That he could easily understand what he was saying. I spent 6 years trying to rack my brain to figure out what Rumsfeld was saying.
This is a reflection, though, on the entire Republican Party. This is what Republicans are about. They're about incompetency, rewarding it. They're about encouraging it. They're about making sure that the vast majority of folks fail by making sure that the routes to advancement are closed except for the elite in this country. And the elite in this country are not the best and the brightest, but the ones that are most well connected to other Republicans or religious nutballs. It's astonishing to watch administration official after administration official who has done nothing but screw up entirely be rewarded, be acknowledged, be praised, have his toes sucked by George W. Bush. It's incredible. I have to believe that comes from Bush's family. Bush could read these speeches that are written for him and say, this is insane. These people are failures. I'm not going to say this. But growing up, Bush's mommy and daddy and the Saudi royal family and the bin Laden family made sure that George W. Bush's path was always greased, that there was always someone there to catch him when he fell on his little bony ass, and there was always someone ready to bail him out and tell him, ah, such a good lad you are. So it's part of Bush's persona. Failure is a good thing. Mommy always comes to kiss it, and Daddy is always there to make it okay. And the latest example of that was what was said today about Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Death. Godspeed, Rumsfeld. I hope you hit a brick wall at 110 miles an hour. Now get out of here.
I normally would not come down in my vest, but they just redid me, and it's wet, so I can't put my coat on.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. Let's go to Lisa, who's calling from Tampa, has to come and hear about Rumsfeld. Hey, Lisa.
Hey, Mike. First-time caller.
Well, welcome
to the
program.
So glad to hear you. But I'm outraged, too, about this.
Yeah.
It makes me sick. You know, I'm a single mother, you know, raising two kids, struggling, and then I hear about this guy, these guys, it just drives me crazy.
I know.
It's like, when do you give a going away party to someone you fire?
I
mean,
know.
Who's paying for it? That's what I'd like to know.
You are. I am.
It just makes me unbelievably sick. I'm just so excited to talk to you. So I'm a little nervous, but I don't know. It just makes me sick. Every day I listen and I see what they're doing, and it's the mafia.
Well, you know, I think it's especially painful. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's equally painful for everybody in this country who realizes what a shell game the Bush crime family has been running on us for 6 years. But it's especially painful, I would think, to people who are not flush, who don't have a whole lot of money, who like you, are trying to do something that requires an awful lot of innovative thought and ways to figure out how to make ends meet and
how to put your kids through college.
Yeah, how to juggle things, how to make things happen. And then to watch these unconscionable bastards doing what they're doing, all this make-believe and pretend. I'm sure, Lisa, in your world, there is no room for very much pretend at all, except
none.
When you read to your children at night, perhaps. But it's infuriating. It's just infuriating.
I know. It just makes me so sick. And could I give a call out to everybody at your blog, MikeMalloy.com?
Well, go right ahead.
Hey, you guys. But
do you write there?
Huh?
Do you visit?
Yeah, I'm right here. I got I put,
no, write with a W. Do you write comments there?
Oh yeah.
Oh, do you?
Oh yeah. I put on the solar tsunami in the lighter side. It's got a picture of the sun exploding. Not exploding, but
on the lighter side.
Yeah, it's the lighter side over there at your blog. But I wanted to call first time, so I'm really nervous. But I'm so glad to have you back.
Well, thank you.
Think like it's like you say things that I'm thinking, you know, and it's just.
No, if I were Rumsfeld right now, I would say yes, Lisa, and I say things that I'm thinking.
Well, it's good to have you back, Mike.
Well, thank you so much. All right, okay. Well, don't be a stranger. Call in once in a while. Okay. All right.
Hi, Kathy. Bye. Bye, Mike. Bye, Kathy.
Care.
Bye, Molly.
Bye-bye. We got some of the greatest listeners to this crazed program in the world, Kathy, I swear to God.
You know, I've been getting a lot of email requests asking when we're going to play Oh Holy Nightmare. And, of course, we're going to play it next Thursday on our holiday, Yulapalooza.
Yeah.
Do you want to play it before then as well?
I'll tell you what, we'll take a vote. When do we go to the next break here? At 20, another minute? Another 2 minutes? Another 1 minute. During the next break, send an email to mike@mikemalloy.com. I guess that'd be the easiest way. mike@mikemalloy.com, saying yes or no. Just one word, yes or no, if you want to hear Oh Holy Nightmare now. We play this on our Christmas show, which will be next Thursday. And by the way, we're not taking any time off. We're taking Friday off. Next Friday, we'll be off. And, of course, Monday, Christmas Day. But that's it. We're not taking one of these. We can't afford to. We're going to be right here. I think the first break we'll take will be in February, right? So we'll be here. And the Christmas party is a week from last night. And we play Oh Holy Nightmare. But if you would like to hear it now as kind of a preview, send me a very quick email. And all you have to put is yes or no. If you don't know the song, Oh Holy Nightmare, I guess don't vote. But if you are familiar with it, if you've heard it on this program, we've played it for the past, 4 or 5 years, haven't we? 3 years? It's astonishing. So quick vote. Break now. And over this break, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Let's hear what you got to say. Yes or no? On Oh Holy Nightmare.
I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall. Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time.
Okay. Okay. Stop. We got about 300 emails here. And the overwhelming majority is yes. Now, there's some good reasons here. The people that say no, like let it wait until party night. But what the hell? If it'll ruin it for you, just pot it down, pot your, however you're listening down for. How long is this? About 3 minutes? Is that what it is? This email from the fish lady, she writes, sure, why not? We can hear it twice. I am dyslexic of Borg. If your assistance is retail, your ass will be laminated. I'm not sure exactly what I guess.
You're just not geeky enough to get that.
I guess
I'm geeky enough. I'm a nerd enough that I understand exactly.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, you know, that's
instead of 7 of 9, she's dyslexic of Borg. Never mind.
No, I don't have any idea what y'all are talking about. It's some code. And somebody else once said yes, but make it a remix of what's that one we play, Kathy? The way it's going to be, the Busta Rhymes thing.
Extinction level event. That would actually not be a bad idea.
And remix it.
I might be able to work on that.
All right. With all these yeses and with deep, abiding respect for the people that voted no, and we will play it again next Thursday night on the party night, but I forget how we came in possession of this. It was emailed to us. Someone sent us this, and it's like a curse that we just can't get away from. So here is the artist and the song singing one of my favorite Christmas carols, O Holy Nightmare.
Oh, holy night. The stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pine till he appeared. And the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope. The weary world rejoices. For yonder breaks a new and glorious morn.
Divine.
God, I think I just pulled the stitches out. Oh, my God. Whew. All right. I don't know. Let's go home. What's to do after that? That is great. I don't know who recorded that. Probably somebody that had just one line too many. All right, let's do some phone calls. Oh my God. AJ, otherwise known as the Music Factory, is calling from New York. Hey, AJ.
Hey, Handsome. I wish you wouldn't have done that.
Why?
That was really painful.
Wasn't that? Have you ever heard that before?
Yeah. I unfortunately sit through it every year when you do it. and I'm a musician, so I can tell you it's not wine that causes that.
No, what is it?
No.
Electric shock, probably.
Yeah.
God.
Hey, listen, quickly, before I get to my point, I want to say that, Randy Rhoads does this thing on Fridays, the Bounce Your Boobies thing.
Yeah, Bounce Your Boobies, right.
And it was funny once, and it has gotten progressively irritating every week after that. But the one time I thought I was going to fall off my chair was when you subbed for her and you sang it through.
Oh, God, that was a fun afternoon. Yeah.
Now I'll tell you, if I would make one request of you, that would be it. I hope you do that again.
Well, if you want to know why they fired us, that might, might have something to do with it.
I wanted to make a quick observation, and then I'll get out of here. I think that Stupid is delaying his strategy till January, his strategy for Iraq,
yeah.
At least in part, because either Christmas or New Year's, we're going to hit that magic number of 3,000 American soldiers dead.
That's right.
Now, I've never understood why 3,000 is more significant than these zero numbers somehow. They're magic numbers for the American public. When they get to be like 2,562, all of a sudden people aren't listening.
Right.
But, 25 and 3,000 and 2,000, these are real. I mean, last time 2,000 was like the country virtually stopped. I have no idea why those numbers are more immoral than any other numbers. But I have a feeling that he's got to take the edge off of it somehow. If he puts out his strategy now, and then in 2 or 3 weeks they hit the magic number of 3,000, this strategy is going to be washed away by the public's at least temporary anger. And sort of reemergence of in the public consciousness about this issue.
That's a good
point. And I think what he's doing is he's sort of reversing that. And first come the deaths, and then in a few weeks he gets to make his big speech. And I think that's the strategy.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. These people wallow around and slosh around in the blood of American soldiers. To the extent that in any other time or any other society, they would have been taken out at this point and tried and convicted and jailed for the rest of their lives at best. So I would imagine you're right.
It's stunning, isn't it?
It is. And yet there is still 30% of the American population that thinks this evil bastard is doing a good job. I can't get my mind around that. I don't care what a person's political orientation is, to think that this George W. Bush and his crime family is doing anything to this country but hurting it is beyond me.
Yeah, that 30% that you mentioned, that's the one that always sets my wife off. She just can't believe it. But
Nor can I. How can there be, roughly speaking, 90 million people in this country? And that's a great generalization because the polls are not to represent all 300 million of us, but even 5 million, 4 million, how can there be more than 10,000 people? And I say 10,000 because that's probably the core nutball group in this country who they don't care what Bush does because he's a godly man and Christ or God or somebody talks to him, they will follow him into hell, which they certainly will, but I don't get it. I don't understand. I think you're right about the announcement, though. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get it either. But I don't care anymore. As long as, with the midterms, the brakes were slammed on this regime a bit, And I'll take that right now after 6 horrendous years.
Yeah, I'll take it,
I'll
too.
I'll take that. You know? Hey, listen, when are we going to hear you on XM again?
I don't know. We're starting Sirius Monday.
I know. That's why I asked.
I don't know if XM is going to pick up the program or not. I'm real happy to be on Sirius. Of course, we'd be happy to be on, Ajax radio station. I mean, I'm not, but I think on Monday, there's some magic buttons going to be, punched and we're going to be on about 10 or 12 stations all at once.
Excellent.
And then it's going to build from there. So I don't know about XM yet.
Do it, Mike. Keep running. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, AJ. Take care. All right.
So long.
All right. We'll talk to you again. Sure do miss New York, don't you? I really do. All right. Quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Just a couple of quickie emails here about the whole Oh Holy Nightmare singer. Wasn't it Rummy that sang it? That's from our good friend Golden Eagle. From Jeff in Pittsburgh. Mike, I believe it's a foregone conclusion that your singer will never get a chance to have sex with Paula Abdul. And the subject line here says, Oh Holy Nightmare, a technical appreciation. This is from Bill, who writes, thanks for playing that amazing rendition. What I find so remarkable is that the soloist was able to accomplish all that with only 2/3 of an octave range. And regarding the pomp and circumstance today for Rumsfeld, Angie writes the following. The subject line is beyond rude. I thought it had something to do with the singer, but no, it has to do with Rumsfeld. Angie writes, hey, Mike, you know how you can do goofy things in front of your pets? Like you do the jerk in your underwear or sit on the floor naked and cut your toenails, but you wouldn't be caught dead letting anyone else see you do that stuff? You know why? Because you don't care what your animals think. Plus, you don't think they get it anyway. They don't know the difference between normal and not normal behavior. So it doesn't matter what you do in front of them. It doesn't faze you. In fact, at times you might enjoy playing with them a little. I get the feeling from Bush and the clan that that's how they see us. The bald-faced lies they tell, the stupid arrogant shows like Rumsfeld's dismissal party, these things are an affront, an insult to us. They know it's all BS, and they know it's a big game. They wouldn't and couldn't do it if they had any respect for us or cared at all what we think of them. I think it's pretty clear every time they open their mouths that they're talking to people they couldn't care less about, and worse, that they think so little of us that they believe we're too stupid to get it. That plus they're all just bastards anyway. Know what I mean? Angie. Oh, yeah. I knew what you mean. Final hour is coming up here fairly quickly, and it's going to be mostly phone calls. I do have just a couple more emails here. I got this from DM. Hi, Mike. I was listening to your program the other evening when one of your callers was discussing the companies that sell fuel from Saudi oil. I, like Kathy, purchased my fuel from Kroger, so I emailed them asking from which country they purchased their oil. Below is the body of the response I got. Just thought you might want to know. And it says here, Dear Ms. M., thank you for contacting the Kroger Company. We appreciate your inquiry regarding our fuel and where it comes from. Our fuel supplier information is proprietary. However, we can say it is supplied by a nationally recognized company. According to published reports, Venezuela, Canada, Mexico, and Saudi Arabia provide the majority of the crude oil used by U.S. refineries. Thanks again for your inquiry. Please let us know if we can be of further assistance. Sincerely, Allison Jabraki, Consumer Affairs. Snotty, arrogant bastards. Aren't they, Kathy? I mean, all right, now what do we do? I mean, I love that 10-cent discount we get per gallon. But what are we going to do now? Well, I mean, this is like the experience you had the other day dealing with Sears on a kitchen range. But I can't take this. This snotty, listen to this. We appreciate your inquiry. Our fuel supplier information is proprietary, which means that's corporate speak for go screw yourself.
Well, also, I guess what they could be saying is, for example, we buy it from Citgo or Texaco or Hess or BP.
Well, then say
that. And we don't want to say that because then you might go to Hess or BP or Citgo or Amoco
and
say,
pay more?
How come I can't get my 10 cents off here when you sell it to Kroger? No, I'm serious. I mean, that could happen.
No, there's no corporate thug in the world that's going to think that. This person, Allison Jabraki, you're not a corporate thug. Allison Jabraki of Consumer Affairs for Kroger just treated our listener here as though she were a fourth grader. It's proprietary, but you know, according to published reports, then she lists the four countries, that provide most of the crude used by U.S. refiners. According to published reports, I'm not saying this, but you know, the implication being that you could look it up yourself. Proprietary information. We're not asking for the formula on your sausage. We're just asking for... Oh, never mind. Thanks, DM.
Maybe we ought to ask that Bush's baked bean dog.
That's not George Bush.
No.
Bush's beans.
Right. Do you think people want to hear about our Sears experience?
No.
I'm really PO'd at Sears.
No, screw Sears. Right. Here in Georgia, we've had an ongoing thing. There's a woman who lives in Gwinnett County named Laura Mallory, who was afraid her child was being led into witchcraft because of the Harry Potter books. So starting about 8 or 9 months ago, she requested the books, Harry Potter books, be taken off the shelves of the public libraries in Gwinnett County. And most people look at her as just a kook ass. I mean, just a total kook ass. But she kept pushing it. Gwinnett, her local school district said no. The Gwinnett County Board of Education said no. The state school board said no. And finally, the Georgia Board of Education voted last night to uphold the decision to leave Harry Potter books on the library shelves. This woman, who is thinking of a legal challenge to the Board of Education's ruling now, I guess take it to court, she says the books mainstream witchcraft in a subtle and deceptive manner in a child-friendly format. The kind of stuff in these books, the murder, the greed, and the violence, why do we let them read them in school? Now, anybody with a lick of sense could tell this woman that if you wanted to get literate on her ass, you could say that banning all books with references to witchcraft would mean classics like Macbeth or Cinderella have to go. My senior correspondent, Chris, says this woman just cracks me up. She talks about murder and greed and violence. What do you want to bet she has a Support Our Troops bumper ribbon and a W04 bumper sticker on her SUV? What do you want to bet she would love to be Monica to Bush's Clinton? Of course, our senior correspondent is kind of prickly that way. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. From Greg in Des Moines, Iowa. Dear Mike, if we ban Harry Potter, do we ban the Chronicles of Narnia? Hell no. Narnia is good, Mojo. By the way, the author of The Wizard of Oz wanted to exterminate the Native Americans. Perhaps we should ban fantasy after all. I didn't know that. Frank Baum wanted to... Welcome back, 7 past the hour. This is the Friday Molloy Show. Yes, Catherine.
Oh, I just found out that Michael Crichton wants to
demonize
anyone who criticizes his thoughts that global warming is a myth, and so much so that he turns journalists into child rapists in his novels.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? He came out with a new novel that took the name of a journalist that criticized him, and as you point out, made his character a child rapist. Well, I guess you can do that. I've read 3 or 4 Crichton novels, and I always found them to be kind of interesting, starting with The Andromeda Strain from 1,000 years ago. But
they're all written like movie treatments now.
Well,
you know, I mean, the last 2 or 3 I read, and I don't even read them anymore because they all read like movie treatments.
Right. You said that twice. The European Union yesterday called for a Middle East free of weapons of mass destruction. And, of course, that puts Israel in kind of a weird position. This was in response to a recent interview in which the Israeli Prime Minister acknowledged his country has a nuclear arsenal. In an interview with German television broadcast last Monday, Ehud Olmert appeared to list Israel among the list of countries that are known to have nuclear weapons. A nuclear-free Middle East. Well, that'll never happen. There'll never be a nuclear-free anything. There just won't. Let's go to your phone calls, if we may. We'll start this segment with Dwayne, who's called in from Mill Valley, California. Hey, Dwayne.
Hey, Mike. Nice to hear your chilled, calm demeanor back on the air again. Now,
yep.
If you could only replace your lyricist with Crosby or Presley.
Yeah, okay.
You'll really fool a country. I'd like to stay with a couple of the comments you had in the first hour from our old-fashioned defense secretary and president.
Sure.
And tie those into People's Lobby's American World Service Corps, which I hope your bloggers will look at the website worldservicecorps.us.
Now, what is this?
It's the American World Service Corps. It's People's Lobby's congressional legislation, citizen-written and citizen-initiated. And we're talking to probably 100 congressional representatives trying to get them to introduce it in the next Congress. And what it would do would it would ramp up over 7 years by about 140,000 Americans a year, so that by the seventh year you'd have 1 million Americans voluntarily serving in their choice of the Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, Habitat for Humanity, Doctors Without Borders, Head Start, Red Cross, International Rescue, Oxfam, Mercy Corps, and State Conservation Corps. And there are financial incentives in there for young people. If they did it, they'd get 2 years of community college tuition plus 2 years of state college tuition. If a baby boomer or a retiree did it, they could dedicate that to the educational needs of their nieces, sons, granddaughters, or take that cash equivalent into their medical savings and IRA account.
Well, I was, educate me here, I was under the impression this sort of arrangement was already available. I thought AmeriCorps guaranteed the participants some sort of college tuition. Tell me how wrong I am.
No, you're correct on that. AmeriCorps does promise some. This would be an addition to that. This is not a new organization. This is an umbrella that just sends more Americans to do service and gives them additional incentives. And the reason I bring this back to Rumsfeld and Bush is the problem with our country that many of us believe is that we're not getting up off of the couch enough. And the experiences we get that are controlled by our government come from corporate jets. People, you know, Rumsfeld and Bush have seen the world mostly by corporate jets. But what we need to do is put more Americans through those organizations serving either at home, repairing Katrina. You could have had a feeble FEMA, and the day after, if you had 10,000 of these World Service Corps volunteers, 10,000 additional volunteers that were incentivized to do more of this, living around New Orleans, they could be out doing the work the next day. And if you had more in the world, for example, in the Middle East, and if you had the 15 or so nations through the Middle East, along with those in South and East Africa, you have 21 nations, 910 million mostly Muslim people. You know how many Peace Corps volunteers we have in that part of the world?
Oh, God, I'm afraid to ask.
Well, take a guess, see how close you come.
Now, what's the geographic area again?
The Middle East, everything from Israel east and then south and east Africa, the border nations like Somalia and those nations, and all of Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Israel, Palestine, Jordan, those nations, the Middle right. East and south and east Africa, 21 nations, 910 million, mostly Muslim people, with a lot of madrasas turning out stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of hatred, as you obviously know.
500 or 600?
Well, there's 58, and they all serve in one country, 58. In Jordan.
58.
And if you look at the countries where the terrorists were trained, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Sudan, we haven't had a Peace Corps volunteer in Pakistan since 67, none in Afghanistan since 76. And in Sudan, from 82 to 84, we had a whopping total of 16. So through the 4 decades plus of the Peace Corps' existence, we've only had 2,217 volunteers there. And we can't speak those languages. We don't understand those cultures because we got guys on corporate jets making policy, and we're sending Halliburtons over there to do our business when we should be sending 1 million Americans around the world every
okay.
year.
Two questions. First of all, how do you inspire people, Americans, American, I would assume young people, or at least people maybe not so young, who have necessary skills and hopefully necessary language skills to go there? That's A. Here's B. How do you convince them to go to areas like Afghanistan, Pakistan, or Sudan, or these other countries where an American would probably be captured and killed?
Well, I think it's going to be more dangerous to do that, but I think this country has a lot of people who want to serve, and if you force your congressional, senatorial, and presidential candidates to take a stand on this, what other way do we nation build in the world? Do we reduce the ugly American image? Mm-hmm. Do we reduce terrorist recruitment than by sending our best assets, which are Americans?
Well, I agree. You get absolutely no argument from me at all. I mean, I really agree with the idea we've talked about in this program probably not recently, but as far back as 4, 5, 6 years ago. But how do you get Americans as greed-fixated as we've become and as fixated as we've become on living in a culture that rewards celebrity but doesn't reward the kind of hard work and dedication and a moral kind of ethical attitude that you're talking about? How do you get people to sign up? I mean, the Peace Corps back in the 60s had an impetus behind it because of the 60s. This is 2006. How do you inspire people? And I'm serious. How do you do it?
Yeah. Well, I think again, one, you do it with a law. And if you go to the website and look at the law, it says we ramp up by 140,000 a year for 7 years till you get to 1 million. And
well, now, wait. Yeah. By using a law, what, you require people to do this?
No. It's volunteer. But okay. The backup bill says, how do you make sure you keep it at a million once you get to it? Mm-hmm. And then it lists a bunch of additional incentives. And so if you need to boost that incentive from 2 years of community college and 2 years of state college tuition higher, mm-hmm. then you do so.
I see. Okay, so you offer incentives, and the most obvious would be education credits or tuition credits.
Well, for a baby boomer like myself or a retiree, they could take that cash equivalent and put it into their medical savings or IRA account. So we address needs back home. But okay. More importantly, I think you got to have the debate in this country. If you don't have enough people, and this is why I hope some of your bloggers and your audience will contact their representatives and say, how do you feel about this? Because when we speak to audiences, it's 90-95% of the audience, maybe 99, I haven't had many, disagree with this. They go away saying, why don't we do this?
All right, hold on. Dwayne, I got to take a break, but I want you to hold on because when we come back, I want you to give the web address again very slowly because I don't think people are able to write it down this quickly. This will give folks a chance to get something to write with. So just stay right there, and we'll come back and get this web address. I so agree with this idea. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy, live on the Nova M Radio Network.
Past the hour, we're talking with Dwayne in Mill Valley, California, whose idea here that we've been talking about is excellent. We've touched on the subject before in the history of this program, but I guess it's been a long time since we've talked about this.
Several weeks, many weeks ago.
Yeah, the idea of universal service, or at least the opportunity for those people who are motivated to overcome the ugly American image and to do something other than go to the mall, I don't know how that sounds. I'm not trying to be a smartass here and say that you know all we do in this country is go to the mall, but I think the point is understood. What is the website? Very very slowly.
www.worldservice.com. Corps, C-O-R-P-S, all one word, World Service Corps .us. And the sponsor of the organization, their website is www.peopleslobby.us, where we've done citizen-initiated law before.
Okay, peopleslobby.usa and World Service Corps
.us. Just U-S at the end. World Service Corps, C-O-R-P-S .us and peopleslobby.us. And before we leave, you know, I'd like to answer your question again about, you know, how can we get Americans. I'd ask your audience to do three or four things. One is, you know, when Biden, Kucinich, write their offices, all of these people I'm going to mention have information on the World Service Corps. They've either had their legislative directors discuss it, and almost every office seems to like it, but they still need support on it. Biden, Kerry, Dean, Obama, Bye. Clinton, Gore, Brock, the Republican Broadback, his office, McCain, Hagel, Vilsack, and any people who live in New Hampshire and Iowa, if they would, you know, go study it, if they like the idea, if they would start going to those meetings where all these presidential candidates come out, I think people ought to base their decision as to who is a smart visionary candidate on how they react to doing what's good for America, and that's getting involved right now before it's too late, because we're dumbing down the whole country by only having 15% of Americans take out passports, and half of those are corporate or military, and you don't have many Americans with backpacks going to do a year or two of service somewhere and coming back fluent in a language, understanding the world, and not being like, you know, as I understand it, our president went to London as his only trip outside of the country with his dad and the Saudis. And that's not a good picture of the world.
That's very true. Dwayne, thanks a lot. Bring this up again the next time you call in. I'm sure a lot of people are going to the website now, but thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thanks for the time.
Sure. Take care. Bye. Take care, Dwayne. I'm intrigued. I sound like Rumsfeld. I'm intrigued by what he has to say, because it's something that we've talked about in this program. I never served in the Peace Corps. I had a real inclination to do it all those years ago. And I think my excuse back then was I was married and had a child, and it was an excuse. I certainly have skills that could be used in, had them then, have them now, that could be used in a country that needs the skills I'm talking about. I think it's a great idea. And I wonder what it would take to inspire people. And I know there are a lot of people who still do this. Dwayne pointed out very low numbers in a major part of the world that needs some sort of an image of Americans in addition to the actual experience of Americans that is not what they're getting now. But I wonder, sometimes. Sometimes I feel like the most cynical old son of a bitch on the planet. It is so difficult for me to believe that people are inspired to do the sort of thing that Dwayne's talking about, that these websites are talking about, any longer. I've mentioned many times in this program that there's a whole generation of people here that are burned out, that devoted an awful lot of energy in the 60s and 70s, and even into the 80s, an awful lot of energy into movements that were democratic, that were pro-American. I mean, in the moral sense, that were pro-human race. You know, there was just so much energy that was expended. And this generation of so-called baby boomers, you know, there's a lot of us that are just so burned out. And a lot of us are getting old. And I just wonder, I wonder if the idea that Dwayne was talking about, if it could catch hold, if it really could. If it takes incentives, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Molloy.
There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Molloy.
It is about 25 minutes before the hour. It is also the, excuse me, the, it's still here in the east, well, all over the country. It's the 215th anniversary of the adoption of the Bill of Rights. Sheila sent me a reminder. December 15th, 1787, the Bill of Rights was included in the Constitution of the United States. So happy birthday, Bill of Rights. 215 years, and the Bush crime family has tried to destroy it. I think that's the thing I can't say that is the thing that pisses me off the most about them, because there are so many things about this corrupt, filthy regime that is infuriating. But that's certainly in the top five. Their disrespect, their disdain for the U.S. Constitution, and most specifically the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. What evil bastards. How, oh, well, we've asked that question a million times. Let's go back to the calls here. Oh, my goodness, I was just going to take someone who was holding on forever. Oh, well, Scott is calling from Federal Way, Washington. That's the name of the city, Scott?
Yeah. It's a little ways outside of Seattle. It's
okay.
Between Seattle and Tacoma, actually.
All right. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Yeah, I'm a recent listener and first-time caller, and I like what I hear so far. And actually, I was just kind of, I was listening to the Dwayne who was on before,
uh-huh.
And I like what he had to say. But in my opinion, the only thing that's really going to improve our vision or our image in the world's nation is the impeachment of these, oh, I don't want to say it, rear ends first before anything else can be done. And, you know, if that's not taken seriously, you know, I don't think nobody's going to look at us seriously again, and with the mistrust as it is, because it'll probably never be gained back anyway. So that's one of the things.
Well, you know, I read something today, someone sent me, written by John Dean, counsel to Richard Nixon, who, while he remains a Republican, I believe, has certainly become a heavy-duty critic of people who would pervert the Constitution, whether it is the Nixon gang or the Bush gang. And he has an essay at findlaw.com, I believe it is, that's out right now. And he explains why impeachment is not going to happen and, in his opinion, shouldn't happen. And
well, you know,
he makes a very coherent argument as to why Pelosi and Reid and the rest on the right. As a matter of fact, it's entitled Refocusing the Impeachment Movement on Administration Officials Below the President and Vice President. And it's a very clear explanation by somebody who certainly knows. This was the counsel to the president who was facing impeachment and conviction.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I got a chance to actually speak with him on a local talk show up here, and I asked him about a comment that he had made. What was the documentary? I believe it was the one by Robert Greenwald that he did about the truth of the truth about the Iraq War, and he had made some comments in there, and I had asked him something about the impeachment. I think it had something to do with the Downing Street Amendments. I don't remember exactly what it was that I asked him about that. And he was explaining the points to me then, but he was applying to the way the makeup of the Congress was at that point. Now, this what you're talking about now may be more recent than because
yeah, this is something. Let's see, it was written. I guess it was just posted at findlaw.com today, the 15th. And as I read this today, trying to read it with an open mind, trying to overcome my disgust for this Bush crime family and real desire to see these bastards removed from office, it occurred to me after reading this that it truly is not going to happen, and probably the effort at impeachment should not happen because it's a total exercise in futility. Needing two-thirds of the Senate to convict is just not going to happen. And the impeachment process, I've said on this program, well, at least impeaching him, which would be more or less indicting him, would make it a matter of record where future generations would see just how this person, George W. Bush, had done such damage, and yet the American public responded with impeachment. But after reading what John Dean had to write today, I think I am going to, and swing over to the side that says no. He's only going to be around for two more years. He and this monster that shares the executive branch with him, Dick Cheney. So, what is important right now is for the Democrat controlled Senate and House to stop these people in their tracks, and. As far as investigations or hearings, yes. I think the American people, myself included, we need to know the depth of the corruption of this filthy administration. But impeachment, I think, really, I really, really, really do think, is and should be completely off the table, Scott.
And speaking of investigations, there's something I want to give for some food for thought.
Okay.
Does anybody really truly believe the numbers of the American death toll that have been out that have been put out there? Because I'm going to tell you right now, I don't.
I don't believe them. No.
I think it's a lot higher than what people have been saying, and I'm going to tell you the reason why that I've come to that conclusion. Because I've heard Scott Ritter on other programs allude to this, and then I have a friend that was a Vietnam vet that was a medic in the Army that said the same thing about when the injured or if airlifted to different hospitals or different, what do they call it, the medical units, so to speak, and that if they die in transit, those are not considered to be deaths in the combat zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they do that for a couple of reasons, or at least this administration is doing this. One is to try to stop from paying out the death benefits or the combat benefits, and the other is to try to make it less, well, for the American public not to be so overwhelmed by the numbers. But I would like to know the true numbers that of the soldiers that really have died, because I don't believe that. Because if you think about it now, we're going into, 4 years into this war?
Right.
Which, you were in Vietnam, there was, somewhere about 8 to 10 years of actual combat, and then about a year and a half drawdown.
Well, World War II was less than what American involvement in World War II is less than what we've experienced in Iraq now.
So if you think at Vietnam that we had over 58,000 deaths, and that's about nearly 6,000 deaths per year, and they're just saying now that it's 3,000, and if you consider the fact that you've had over 650 Iraqis that have been killed,
650,000, right.
The numbers, they just don't add up. They just don't jive. And I'm not trying to say that because I'm wishing that more have been dead.
I understand. And I think most people in this country would agree with what you're saying, that those numbers have to be higher, that the Bush administration deliberately and consciously lies about everything. So why wouldn't they lie, whatever their motives are, about the number of dead, whether it is payouts for GI insurance or just to keep the pressure off. But I agree with you. I think the death toll is much higher.
Plus, if you consider the fact that you don't see any of the funerals on TV, plus the fact that they've quelled the showing the drapings of any of the coffins or anything like that. So,
right.
You know, it's a mystery. It's a numbers game to them.
It is. It is indeed. Well, listen, I'm glad you called. I hope you call again, okay?
Thank you.
All right, Scott. Take care. Ron is calling from Prescott, Arizona. Ron, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey.
Before I get to the justice for the Bush crime family, are you familiar that they have given Halliburton a $350 million contract to build detention centers in? Oh, you are?
Yeah. We've talked about that on the program a couple of times, yeah.
Okay, I must have missed it. Yeah, it's what do you think those detention centers are going to be used for?
Well, at this point, possibly, hopefully, nothing. Had the Democratic Party not assumed control of the House and the Senate in these last elections, they probably would have been places for people like, oh, I don't know, maybe me, maybe Randy Rhodes, maybe people who are real threats to this this Bush crime family. I'm just guessing.
Okay, so you
hey,
do...
Listen, let me take a break and I'll come back. We've got to take a break here. We'll come right
okay.
back, right?
Okay.
All right, stay with us, truth seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
I'm sure that Europe is a lovely place to visit. My wife would love to go there every single year. But they're just puppies.
Yep, 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 yep.
They need their stuff there, yep, the big dogs over here. I will rule the world forever. I'm straight and white and male, American and free.
Condoleezza, check my pussy.
Bill O'Reilly, Devolt Systems, Mass Destruction, me!
Ten before the hour, thanks to the Nova M crew here, Ian Huff, who engineered the program at Phoenix and answered your calls, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, who archives the program, Mark Marshall, who manages MikeMalloy.com, and the moderators there at the message board, also Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Thanks to everybody. We were talking with Ron, I believe, in Prescott, Arizona. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Ron. Thanks for holding on. We're back.
I just kind of suspect that those detention centers may be used for, like you said, political dissidents in the future. Because once they have them, you know, they're going to use them.
Well, I certainly agree with that, and I also the existence of those camps go all the way back to the mid-80s. That was an Oliver North project that wound up...
Rex 84.
Yeah, wound up being disregarded for a number of years until the Bush crime family took over. I would hope or wish that the Republican administration would get rid of them. However they do that, I frankly don't care. Demolish them, turn them over to private developers in these various cities, and stop this.
Well, that'll be up to the new Congress. Maybe they can do that. But I've been following the Bush crime family since 1980 when Daddy Bush ran against Reagan in the primaries and was aware that Daddy Bush was a member of the CFR, and Reagan said he would never pick Bush as a running mate, and he went for, I think it was Schweitzer, tried to pick him.
Lowell Schweiker?
Schweiker. Yeah.
Senator from where?
Illinois.
Illinois, that's right.
And they got to Reagan and told him you had to take Bush or else. And I think the assassination attempt by Hinckley was a Bush job, just to get rid of him or scare him.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So I follow these guys, and I get as angry as you do, but... according to what you believe, if they escape justice in this life, they'll face no justice, correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much my belief. You're here, then you're not here.
Well, that's one of the good things about believing in the Bible, because it says that those who die in their sins and do not believe in Jesus Christ as their Savior will wind up facing judgment. They'll be found guilty and cast into hell.
Well, yeah, but also the Christian faith especially has an enormous out taken most recently by Augusto Pinochet in Chile, who on his deathbed or near his deathbed confessed his responsibility for all the horror and terror that he caused in that sad country. In the 70s and 80s, and according to the Catholic faith, he has now been absolved of his sins and will enter into the gates of heaven. Now, all of it to me is nonsense, and I've said this before. Justice, if there is to be such a thing, has to be effected now. Against or with the people who need justice. We all need justice, but I mean justice in a karmic sense or bringing things back into balance. No, I don't believe in the great hereafter where there's justice. And that's why it is very important to me that people who violate the law should be handled here.
Well, I agree with you. I don't tell people to forget about bringing people to justice. I believe that the American people should put the Bush crime family, Daddy, Baby, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rice, and all of them on trial, and if found guilty, punished accordingly. Mm-hmm. And if it has to be done by Congress, that's the way it should be done. But I just have seen too many criminals get away with their crimes in this life, and that's why believing in the Bible and a heaven and a hell keeps me sane. Well, you know, keeps me from going crazy.
I understand.
Yeah.
No, I certainly understand.
I think it could help you, but, you know.
Well, no, been there, done that, got the T-shirt. So, no, I it's not like I'm missing out on something that I need to explore. You know, like I say, been there, done that, got the T-shirt, and decided, no, sorry, that's not for me.
Okay, well, I thought I'd just bring it up and see your response.
Yeah, I appreciate your thought, all right?
Okay.
Take care.
Mike.
Stay in touch. Alan is calling from Miami. Alan, you probably have about a minute here.
Oh, about a minute. We'll see what we can do.
Okay.
Last thing was a bit enlightening. I think...
I look around, I think our society is pretty insane. I mean, anybody who has any sense whatsoever knows we have allowed ourselves to place the village idiot in charge of everything, and we have mechanisms that pretend that this didn't happen.
Yeah.
And we all step up, and we're walking on eggshells all the time, afraid of, but we're never quite told what all the fear at the upper levels are about. I would hate to really know what some of that intimidation and the fear of death is among some of our officials. But I look around. I have to disagree with the conclusion of John Dean. I haven't read his article, but I think crimes have been committed. I mean, they had the Nuremberg trials to settle some things after World War One. There are really some horrible crimes going on right now.
I know.
The thing is that I think if elected officials do not go the road of trying to try the people or investigate the people for their crimes, they become accomplices.
Well, Alan, you would get no argument out of me except for the fact that there are too many right-wing thugs in the Senate to ever agree to an impeachment, and I have to leave it there. I'll tell you what I'd like you to do. If you get a chance over the weekend, read the article. Maybe we'll talk about it on Monday night, but we have to leave it there right now. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it,
sure.
Alan. Take care.
Bye.
And thanks to everybody for participating in the program all week. I do appreciate it, however you did that. I'll see you Monday. Take care.